Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world development. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
There were hundreds of people gathered this morning at the vigil in the main square in Brussels. And more than anything is that the entire government descended on foot from the parliament down to the main square in an attempt to show that we should not be afraid.
That's Esther Yuda reporting from the Belgian capital Brussels. Details next. Also, human rights groups are accusing Hungary of unnecessarily detaining hundreds of asylum seekers. And reports from Guinea say 5 people have now died of Ebola since the recent re-emergence of the disease. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Belgians marked a minute of silence today for the victims of the Brussels terrorist attacks as authorities identified 2 of the suicide bombers in the assaults that killed more than 30 people and injured around 270 others. Authorities have identified 2 of the suicide bombers and are hunting for a third man. Lisa Bryant reports from the Belgian capital.
Vive la Belgique! Ouais!
The square outside the Brussels Stock Exchange was packed at midday as Belgians gathered to mourn the victims of Tuesday's bombings that ripped through the city's airport and a subway car. A red and white banner posted on a marble pillar of the Stock Exchange read, "United Against Hatred." A group of youngsters spray-painted, "Love is Stronger," on a door nearby. Many here are in shock. Some count loved ones among the victims. Others are searching desperately for their whereabouts. City Hall worker Suzanne Ibrahim says she's worried about a close friend who was in the metro when it was attacked by a suicide bomber.
I only have a few details because he's still like in a critical situation, but he was in the explosion at the metro. And yeah, he was hit by the blast, so he's still in intensive care. And we don't know yet how he's going to make it or not.
Belgian authorities have identified brothers Khalid and Ibrahim El-Bakrawi as suicide bombers in the metro and airport attacks. Authorities also found bomb-making material in the apartment of Ibrahim El-Bakrawi, along with a note in a trash can that said he was being hunted down. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for the attacks that appear increasingly linked to November's Paris assaults.
Maintenant, nous sommes toujours tristes parce que bon, malheureusement, il n'y a que des victimes qui n'ont rien à voir, toutes des personnes comme vous et moi.
Brussels resident Larbia Bawi, like everyone else here, says he's sad about the bloodshed. Many attending the moment of silence here are Muslims like Arbawi, appalled that the attackers are acting in the name of their religion and worried they will be stigmatized as a result. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Brussels.
Belgian authorities continue searching for one of the men believed to be responsible for yesterday's airport and metro bombings in Brussels, which killed at least 31 people and wounded 271 others. Belgian federal prosecutor Frederik Van Law confirmed that 2 brothers, Khalid and Ibrahim El-Bakrawi, were the suicide bombers killed in the attacks. Authorities have not identified the third man, who is still at large. Several leads have been uncovered. Acting on a tip from a taxi driver, authorities found a large amount of explosives, detonators, and a suitcase full of nails during a raid at a house in Charabik, neighborhood of the capital. Reporter Esther Judah is in Brussels. VOA's William Eagle asked for the latest information on the attacks.
In terms of who carried out the attacks, so the police have now confirmed that the 2 El-Bakrawi brothers were involved, one of them in the airport and one of them to do in Malbec metro station, which is the second bombing to go off. They have also confirmed that the third missing suspect, which they released an image of yesterday morning, who escaped from the airport, is still on the loose, despite reports that he'd been arrested. There were raids yesterday afternoon in Scarbeck, which is another residential area of Brussels, where one suspect has been arrested, whereas there's no no knowledge of his identity or his exact relation to the report, to the attacks. So that is the latest with who's been stopped. And the raids that were carried out yesterday in Skarbek have also linked both the attack to Abdel Salah, who was arrested Friday, who's been intimately related to the attacks in Paris.
Were there any explosives found in those raids? And also, in the CTV photograph, there was a man dressed in white. Do we know who he is, and is he being searched for?
So in terms of the raids yesterday, is that, yes, there were detonators and nails that were found, and also various sorts of chemicals, although there were no chemicals reported until now used in the attack. But they were found in this apartment, as he linked to it. So, yes, most definitely there have been arms and also these explosives that were found in the raids. And in terms of the missing suspect, is that that is the man that you're talking about who was identified on the CCTV. They say that he is Lash Rui, who is has been linked to the Paris attacks. However, it's unconfirmed.
In fact, at this point, haven't they concluded, or perhaps is it clearly proven, that the two main attackers, did have links to the Paris attacks in November?
There's no confirmed link between the two. The same as, for instance, ISIS has presumed responsibility for the attacks, and indeed the apartment which was raided, which has been linked to the attack, was an ISIS flag was also found there. So one would indicate that it's linked to ISIS, and one indications are also linking these two brothers to this flat. So for now, it's a developing story of which I'm sure there will be concluding evidence pointing in one direction or the other. But until now, we're waiting for confirmations from the authorities.
I understand that you spoke to a local official today. Can you tell me about that and what did he have to say?
So I'm actually standing in Molenbeek now, where I spoke to the deputy mayor of Molenbeek, who's also of Arabic descent. So very much representative of the community here. What he told me is that he felt that there was a scapegoating after the Paris attacks to Molenbeek, and indeed it was a political reality that Abdel Salah, many of the attackers, had come through Molenbeek. However, this had been a distraction from what was also going on in Paris. Why Paris, and why are we blaming Molenbeek? Again, now he was acknowledging the fact that there were links to this area, but also concerned of this over-focus on Molenbeek, which was a distraction from the issues going on in Belgium, but also Europe at large, and also to distract from the fact that there was a huge security failure.
How is the atmosphere in Brussels today? When does the airport open? Are the trains running? Are people at work?
So quite different from post-Paris attacks, where Brussels went into total lockdown and the shops were closed, is that Brussels today is not in lockdown. The shops were closed yesterday afternoon, businesses were closed, people were returning home, and people were afraid. Today, I'm standing out on the street now. It's really quite busy, and everything is open. There were hundreds of people gathered this morning at the vigil in the main square in Brussels. And more than anything is that the entire government descended on foot from the parliament down to the main square in an attempt to show that we should not be afraid.
That was reporter Esther Judah in Brussels. She spoke with VOA's William Eagle. In related news, the Associated Press reports that heightened security concerns in Brussels have led to the postponement of a judicial hearing today of Salah Abdisalam. He was set for possible extradition to France for his alleged role in the attacks in Paris last November. The AP says an assistant to Abdisalam's lawyer says he is now scheduled to appear before a panel of judges tomorrow. In news on Europe's migrant and refugee crisis, human rights groups are accusing Hungary of unnecessarily detaining hundreds of asylum seekers. They say it's preventing people from receiving proper treatment for illness and trauma. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports migrants and refugees at the Greek-Macedonia border staged more protests today. The border remains closed and is likely to remain so for the foreseeable future. Macedonia's Defense and Security Committee in Parliament is endorsing a draft measure to extend the state of emergency at the Greek border from June to the end of the year. The state of emergency has been in effect since last August. Small protests also were held on three Greek islands today. Some migrants and refugees protested their expected deportation back to Turkey under the new agreement to reduce refugee flows to Europe. And Germany's foreign minister says the European refugee crisis cannot be solved until the civil wars causing people to flee their countries come to an end. The United Nations estimates since the beginning of 2015, well over a million migrants and refugees have fled Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and other nations for Europe. A majority made the dangerous sea crossing from Turkey to the large island of Lesbos, Greece. Over 150,000 migrants have landed there so far this year. However, before they can start new lives in Europe, these migrants and refugees must register and make their case for asylum. Earlier this year, VOA's Adam Phillips spent some time at Better Days for Moria, an all-volunteer camp. It's adjacent to the official compound where the new arrivals try to obtain their temporary visas. But that became impossible this week for Pakistanis and migrants from some other nations. That's because the new EU-Turkey agreement required their deportation back to Turkey to apply. Although Better Days for Moria is effectively closed, the medical tent will continue to operate for the time being. That facility is the subject of Part 3 of Adam Phillips' series on the migrant situation on Lesbos.
Is the family vomiting or having diarrhea or this cough?
Just the baby.
I assume the baby's not sleeping.
It's nearly 8 p.m., nearly the end of a 12-hour shift at Better Days for Moria's medical tent. Dr. Siani Shafi, a London-based physician and mother of five, is speaking by walkie-talkie with a roving member of her small staff of doctors, nurses, and aides about a new case they discovered in one of the family tents.
So turn it on, pop it in the ear, and press the button. It takes about 10 seconds for it to read the temperature.
This promises to be another busy night. Scores or even hundreds of new arrivals are expected. Some of them will arrive at Better Days for Moria, wounded or traumatized by their journey or the violence they fled back home. Other patients have become ill due to the rough conditions in the camp. Dr. Shafi and her colleagues are all volunteers.
They put a call out for doctors to come to Lesbos. I couldn't say no anymore.
When Dr. Shafi arrived here in October 2015, the land where Better Days for Moria now stands was just a muddy olive grove. Most refugees slept in the open air. Gastroenteritis was rife with no running water or toilets.
Certainly the earlier days, because of the absolutely awful hygiene sanitation, everybody was vomiting and having diarrhea. Right now with the cold, it is definitely bad chest infections, pre-pneumonia, pneumonia, tonsillitis, but then becoming abscesses and infection spreading through the bloodstream, so septicemia and septicemic shock, quite a considerable amount of hypothermia and dehydration. We've started to have to put intravenous fluids, for example.
The medical facility stocks the basics, medicines, for example, and bandages, even dental equipment, all donated. The staff struggles each day to keep it running.
We're trying to warm the place we're in. We keep running out of diesel every so often, and there's maintenance costs to running a place like this. There's legal issues. So there's constant battles, but the will of everybody here, the dedication, the energy, you know, people going with so little sleep, barely caring for themselves, just to make this happen. You know, so there's a lot of love here.
Shafi points out that a large streak of optimism also runs through the camp. Most refugees reach better days for Moria within an hour or two of their arrival on Lesbos, wet and tired from their long and often terrifying journey.
For them, this is the point where their life hopefully changes for the better. They're in Europe. Then, I think at this stage, they have only one thing on their mind, and that is to get through Europe as quickly as possible. So I've had little children who have been victims of bomb blasts with stitches and sutures everywhere. I've had old women and men with broken arms and broken legs who will not stop. The babies with the pneumonia that I mentioned, their parents will not stop to complete their treatment. They are in such a hurry to get away from here.
In spite of the camp's relative safety, Dr. Shafi says that patients tend not to talk directly about the wars and other violence they're fleeing.
I just see the evidence of it. There's the obvious wounds, stitches, shrapnel pain, limping, disabilities, amputations. But, for example, talking about psychological, right now on the ward we have a gentleman who is acutely psychotic. He's in total shock. He's not eating. He's not drinking. I've just started him on antipsychotic medication last night. I think the shock of what he's been through has caused this.
So far, no one has died at the Better Days for Moria medical tents. The facility does have some emergency resuscitation equipment, but if necessary, the critically ill can be transferred to a local hospital.
We're hoping to reduce the amount of work being sent to the local hospitals because the doctors were inundated, working extraordinarily long shifts and very overwhelmed. So they are pleased that we're here because they've noticed a difference in their workload.
I asked Dr. Shafi if she ever got overwhelmed herself.
I've had lots of ups and downs. It's big highs when you see the smiles on people's faces, when you do the littlest thing and it makes them happy, and really big lows when it hits you, you know, what these guys are going through. And sometimes you have to cry. You know, what can you say? You have to cry. You have to remind yourself, and you get reminded that ultimately I'm human, and these are what humans do, you know. Personally, I pray. I believe in God, and he gives me a lot of strength to do what I do.
Dr. Siana Shafi is a London-based doctor who helped to found and now helps direct the medical tent at Better Days for Moria. She has expanded her work to include the mobilization, staffing, and clinical oversight of mobile medical clinics on the Greek-Macedonian border where thousands of migrants are now stranded. Adam Phillips, VOA News, on Lesbos, Greece.
In related news, the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders announced today that it was suspending its activities at the Moria Registration Center. The group, also known as MSF, says it's opposed to forcing certain migrants to leave Lesbos. It says continuing operations at Moria would make MSF complicit in a system it considers unfair and inhumane. You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Twenty-three past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Belgian authorities continue searching for one of the men believed to be responsible for yesterday's airport and metro bombings in Brussels, which killed at least 31 people and wounded 271 others. And human rights groups are accusing Hungary of unnecessarily detaining hundreds of asylum seekers. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Reports from Guinea say 5 people have now died of Ebola since the recent re-emergence of the disease. Radio France International reports the announcement of the deaths came from Guinea's National Coordination of the Fight Against Ebola program. It also says Liberia has closed its common border with Guinea as a result. The International Federation of the Red Cross says there are also a number of suspected cases of Ebola in the Macenta and the Nzérékora prefectures. That's in Guinea's forest region. Nearly 1,000 people who came into contact with the Ebola victims have been identified. Mirabella Inkakima is spokesperson for the Red Cross. From Conakry, she spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua and efforts to, about efforts to raise awareness and contain the outbreak.
Currently, the Red Cross is involved in safe and dignified burial for the disease. The Red Cross is also involved in beneficiary communication activities. We have trained volunteers who are involved in door-to-door awareness. We have deployed the mobile radio for awareness activities during the quarantine period, which has to begin on Thursday.
And how big an area must you cover in your door-to-door operations?
For now, this quarantine, this specific activity, which we call in French micro-cerclage, concerns 110 families around the affected family. To make sure that everyone who has been a contact, who has been a direct contact, is involved with those activities. It's concerned because it's not only the Red Cross which is involved in the quarantine activities. We have a large gamut of activities with other partners involved in the response. So the door-to-door activity will be for the 110 families.
Is the Red Cross taking any other measures?
We are involved in surveillance activities. The Red Cross is involved in cross-border surveillance activities, which are still ongoing. Those activities were in the heightened surveillance action plan that started after the country was declared free. So for the Karia region, the Red Cross has deployed volunteers for health checkpoints at border areas. And of course, we also have awareness activities ongoing with radios in Forest Karia. Also, the Red Cross has deployed information kiosks to continue sensitizing the population, not only around Ebola, but around other diseases.
Mirabella Inakakima is spokesperson for the International Federation of the Red Cross. From Conakry, she spoke to VOA's Jody Kepawa. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing and the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We will discuss the Benin presidential election. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.